Krishna. So today we are reading from this chapter 26 from Canto 11. Chapter 26 is known as Aila Gita. And for some of us who intermittently attend Bhagavatam classes, Aila is none other than King Pururava. And this pastime has appeared now in the 11th canto in the 26th chapter, but it has also appeared in the 9th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, where this pastime has been given in great detail about King Pururava. So this King Pururava, first we'll discuss a little bit of the background of King Pururava and how he has come into this situation. So King Pururava comes down in the Moon dynasty, in the Soma dynasty, and he was born to one king called Buddha, not the Gautam Buddha, but another king called Buddha and Ila. His wife's name was Ila. And King Pururava was a son who was born to them. And he was a very well-qualified son. He was a great Kshatriya with lots of wealth, opulence, power and all good qualities. He was a reservoir of all good qualities. And like Narad Muni, who is the expert preacher, he keeps traveling all around the universe, glorifying devotees of the Lord. So once Narad Muni was in the court of Indra, in the heavenly kingdom, and he was glorifying King Pururava from the earth planet. He said, this king is there on the earth planet, who is such a qualified king, he is a reservoir of all good qualities. So when Urvashi, who is one of the heavenly damsels of the heavenly planet, she heard this glorification from Narad Muni, she was very attracted to King Pururava and his qualities, and she desired to have union with him. So she came down to the earth planet, and she brought along with her two lambs from the heavenly planets. These two lambs she used to treat as her own sons. She used to care for these two lambs and she was very attached to these two lambs. And she starts seeking out King Pururava. And when she finds King Pururava, she gets very attracted to him because he was very good looking as well. And the same thing happens with King Pururava. Like we know in the material world, the principle, Prabhupada says the whole material world is based on sex life and Maithuni Bhav, attraction to the opposite sex. So even King Pururava gets attracted to Urvashi because Urvashi is from the heavenly planet. She is the most beautiful damsel of the heavenly planets. And they both express a desire to have union with each other and they get married. And in this way they spend lots and lots of years just having sexual union with each other and passing their days in fulfilling their lusty desires. But before getting married, Urvashi lays one condition to King Pururava. She says that these two lambs which I have brought with me, you should look after them as your own sons because I am very attached to these lambs. And the second condition is that I should never see you naked except at night when we are having sexual union. So these are the two conditions which Urvashi tells King Pururava. Now after they have spent so many years together on the earthly planet, King Indra has started missing Urvashi actually. And he tells the Gandharvas that the king, my heavenly court is looking very empty without Urvashi, Suna Lagrai, like we say in Hindi. So he was saying, he tells the Gandharvas, go and get Urvashi back, where has she gone? So the Gandharvas come in search of Urvashi and they see that she has been married to King Pururava and she is spending her time with him. So in order to get her back, they steal the two lambs from the bedroom or wherever they have been kept, and Urvashi is very much aggrieved when she sees that her lambs are being taken away by the Gandharvas. So she immediately tells King Pururava, and she actually, it's given in the 9th canto, that she actually chastises him with very piercing words. She says that you are like a woman who is just lying down in bed, although you have the body of a man, you are not able to protect my sons, these lambs who are like my sons, you go and get them immediately and come. So Pururava was so much afflicted by these piercing words of this woman, that without caring for anything, he just runs outside the Gandharvas who were taking the lambs away. And he does not realize that he was naked and he had not put his clothes on. And he somehow fights with the Gandharvas and he gets the lambs back. He explains to them that Urvashi is very much aggrieved and I need the lambs back. She may leave me and go away. So he gets the lambs back and while he is coming back with the lambs, Urvashi sees him. And she says that I had told you this condition before we got married, that I should never see you naked other than when we are in bed together. And now you have appeared naked before me, so I'll have to leave you. And she just leaves home and goes away. In 1 second she leaves his association and she walks away. And King Pururava, who was so attached to this woman from the heavenly planets and to her beauty, and he was still so much full of lustful desires, that he's totally broken. And he runs behind her. And again he is still naked and he runs behind her and he tells her, don't leave me and go, I still want to have your association. Don't give up my association so soon. And that is the situation when he is speaking these verses. he's saying, and now he is all, but Urvashi doesn't look back, she just goes away, because that was the condition she had laid, that I should not see you naked. So she just goes away, and then King Pururava is standing, and he's not only feeling ashamed, but he's also feeling very remorseful about his situation, that he was a great king belonging to the Soma dynasty, and here he's standing naked, running behind a woman. And then he says this famous Gita, which is known as Aila Gita. So this whole Aila Gita is actually representing how a conditioned jiva must not be attached to the opposite sex, and how sense gratification is detrimental for anyone's spiritual progress in this material world. And we see that the purpose of Srimad Bhagavatam, we see such examples keeping on appearing in the pages of Srimad Bhagavatam. Because the whole purpose of the Srimad Bhagavatam is to make us detached from sense gratification and make us firmly attached to the lotus feet of Lord Shri Krishna. And to explain how we should not be attached to sense gratification, the pages of Srimad Bhagavatam are replete with lots of allegories. Because we are in the material world and we are conditioned jivas, so we may not understand direct instructions sometimes. And that is why the acharyas in the Bhagavatam use lots of allegories to explain how a jiva is attached to sense gratification and how he should be detached. So one such allegory was, we studied recently in our Bhakti Vaibhav course, in Canto 4, was of King Puranjana. So this allegory was being explained by Narad Muni to King Prachina Barhishat. King Prachina Barhishat was also like King Pururava in one aspect, that he was very attached to his family life, and he was very attached to doing karmakandiya sacrifices to increase his wealth, to increase his prosperity. And Narad Muni wanted to detach him from all this. So he knew that he cannot directly preach to King Prachina Barhishat that how, you know, this is all futile and you should be attached to the lotus feet of Krishna and to devotional service. So he tells this allegory of King Puranjana. And King Puranjana is nothing but a conditioned living entity who has been entrapped in a material body of 9 gates. And this King Puranjana, after he is entrapped in this material body of 9 gates, seeks out a woman for association. He actually comes across a woman, and this is, Prabhupada explains, this is nothing, because it's an allegory. So Puranjana is the conditioned living entity, and he comes across a woman who represents lusty intelligence, and he gets attracted to her and he wants to have union with her. And then they both get married. The woman also had attraction, like here we see Urvashi and Pururava had attraction for each other. And they both get married, and they spend years and years, like Pururava and Urvashi, just in sexual union and being attached to their family and to their home. And but what happens to such a conditioned living entity? Again, Narad Muni explains with an allegory that Chandavega, now Chandavega is nothing but the force of time. Chandavega comes, and along with him comes Jara. Jara is old age. And then comes Mrityu. So they, all these three come and they snatch the living entity away from that body and they take him into another body. So since King Puranjana was so attached to that woman, at the time he did not want to leave the body. When Chandavega was taking the soul out forcibly, he was just thinking of his wife, like we see Pururava. He was lamenting for Urvashi. So this Puranjana was also thinking of his wife, Puranjani. And he was saying, alas, I have to leave her and go. How will she maintain such a big family? I have so many children, so many grandchildren. Who will maintain all of them? How will she look after all of them? So he was constantly thinking of his wife. And because we know in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, yam yam vapi smaram bhavam. So because he was thinking of the woman, while he was leaving his body, he was transferred to the body of a woman in his next life. And this is the allegory Narad Muni explains to Prachina Barhishat, that this is what happens if you are too attached to your wife, if you are too attached to your family, then you will get transferred into a similar body in your next birth. And also in the 5th canto, Jadabharat, during Jadabharat's instructions to Maharaj Rahuguna, he also uses a very powerful allegory to describe how sense gratification is detrimental and how a jiva gets entrapped and entrenched in this material world in sense gratification. So Jadabharat uses the allegory of a merchant. He uses this allegory and he says that there was a merchant who was entering a forest and he wanted to buy various commodities, like sometimes, especially in the olden days, merchants used to go to forests because there is things are available freely, like certain types of herbs and woods, whatever their business would be, they can get all these things freely. And they bring all these things back to sell them at a profit. But when he enters this forest, he faces the, he has lots of hopes, but he faces lots of horrors also in this forest. He is attacked by so many vicious animals and he is pricked by so many thorns. So Jadabharat is explaining to Maharaj Rahuguna all these, this whole allegory of this merchant entering the forest, because same thing, he wanted to detach Rahuguna from sense gratification and attach him to Krishna's lotus feet. And similar allegory is there explained by Bhakti Vinod Thakur. So all the acharyas who are very expert in preaching, all our previous acharyas starting from Narad Muni, Bhakti Vinod Thakur, Prabhupada also used to use lot of allegories to depict sense gratification. So Bhakti Vinod Thakur gives a very powerful allegory in his commentary to the verse, I Nanda Tanuja Kinkaram Patitam Ma Vishame Bhavam Budho. So this verse from Shikshashtakam, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explains that how the jiva who has fallen down in this material world, he has entered the perilous or poisonous ocean of this material world. And he is suffering because he has entered this ocean. So Bhakti Vinod Thakur also uses the allegory of a man who is very attractive to enter the ocean, to enter an ocean and play in the ocean or find out minerals from the ocean. So Prabhupada used to say that an ocean looks very attractive or very pleasing from a distance. He was saying this once to his disciples on a morning walk. They were walking along a beach. And he says that look at the ocean, how attractive and calm and peaceful the ocean is looking right now. But if you enter into it, the same ocean will become very horrific and it may not give you an attractive or a calm experience. You may have a very horrible experience if you go into the depths of the ocean. And the same thing had happened when the tsunami happened a few years ago, I think in 2004 or something. And so many people were killed in the tsunami. So on the Thailand was the worst affected in the tsunami. And on the beaches of Thailand, there were so many people who were enjoying. As usual, they were all entrenched in their sense gratification and enjoying on the sunny beaches of Thailand. And before a tsunami comes, actually the ocean recedes several kilometers, it recedes back and then it surges up due to the earthquake happening at the bottom of the ocean. So while these people were on the beach, the ocean receded by many kilometers it receded. And the people were very attracted when they saw the ocean receding because it was a unique phenomena they were experiencing. Like in our normal day-to-day life, we have not seen an ocean going suddenly backwards by few kilometers. So they all ran towards the ocean to see what is this happening, how come the ocean is receding. And because the ocean receded, so many aquatic creatures were visible suddenly. So they were also attracted to the aquatic creatures. They wanted to see the various fish and shellfish and oysters and crabs and all these things which became visible. So they were actually running towards their death. And they didn't realize, and then suddenly a huge tidal wave came up. So when it was described that there were huge sheets of white, like walls of white water which were coming towards them. And again when this is coming, they didn't realize that they are going to die in this huge wave which is coming. They thought again it's a very unique phenomena which is happening and they are experiencing for the first time. So they were standing there and it was written in the news that some of them were trying to click photograph of this huge tidal wave which was approaching. And it was described that they were actually photographing their impending death or their oncoming death, not realizing that death was staring them in the face, but they were not realizing that. And they were thinking they'll get some enjoyment and they'll share these photographs with other people later on. But there was no later on time for them. They were all swept away in the ocean. So in the Niti Shastra it is explained that how these people could not see their incoming impending death which was staring them right in the face, and a similar animal is a vulture. Now it is explained that a vulture's eyesight is so powerful that he can see for miles and miles. And it is explained he can see for 100 yojanas. Yodikad yojana shatat pashyati ham visham khagah se sa eva prapta kalastu pashabandham na pashyati. So it is said that this vulture's eyesight is so powerful that from 100 yojanas away, he can detect a dead animal on the ground. He may be high up in the sky, but he can detect if a dead animal is there on the ground. But the same vulture, and this is explained in the Shastras, the same vulture cannot see when death is staring at it in its face. So it says, Pasha Bandham Na Pashyati, he cannot see his death. His eyesight is materially powerful, but spiritually very weak. So he cannot see his impending death and death comes and takes him away. So like Srila Prabhupada explained, how the ocean is so attractive from far away, but if you enter, it is horrific. So same way Maya is also there. Maya looks very attractive from far away. Sense gratification looks very attractive and Maya entices the living entity. Come and enter, come and enter. But as soon as you enter into the realm of Maya or into the depths of Maya, or you start getting entangled in this Maya, immediately you face the horror. Maya immediately shows you that face of herself and you immediately start facing the horrors of Maya or enjoying Maya. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur further explains in his allegory to that verse, Ai Nanda Tanuja Kinkaram, that how this jiva is attracted to enter into this ocean. Now he is attracted to enter into this ocean or this bhavasagar because he thinks that he will get some minerals from the ocean or he will get lots of wealth from the ocean. But the first thing that this jiva encounters is the huge tidal waves which are coming in the ocean. And these tidal waves, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, are the threefold miseries of material life, which is adhyatmic misery, adi bhautik misery and adi daivika misery. And the jiva is tossed around in these waves and he goes up and down in these waves, being beaten continuously by these threefold miseries. And sometimes he goes up in his, and takes a body which is suitable in the upper planetary systems, and sometimes he goes down in the hellish planetary systems. So like this he is transmigrating through various species of life, tossing, getting tossed up and down. And because he is getting so much tossed, he becomes so exhausted. So he becomes exhausted and tired and he wants to drink some water. He wants to quench his thirst. But he is in the middle of the ocean. So what is available to quench his thirst? Nothing but salty water all around him. So he tries to drink the salty water because nothing else is available. But a quality of salty water or a characteristic of water is when it is too salty, if you drink it, it actually aggravates your thirst. So the more and more you drink thinking that this is water and it's going to quench my thirst, but it keeps on aggravating your thirst. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains that this is nothing but Maya. So when you try to enjoy more and more sense gratification, it is like putting fuel on fire. Even in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna explains that the more you enjoy your senses, they are never going to be satisfied. You are just putting fuel on fire and the fire is getting bigger and bigger. Your desires are getting bigger and bigger. So same thing, you keep drinking salty water but your thirst is not getting quenched. You keep feeling thirsty more and more and more. And when he is so tired with this salty water, he starts seeking out the association of other people. He thinks that if I get some association or if I get some company, I will be relieved from this frustration of not being able to quench my thirst. But who is there in the ocean to associate with? There are sharks, there are big fishes, there are big shellfish and I don't know what other aquatic octopuses, some are deadly. So he has to just associate with all these creatures from the ocean. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur compares these creatures in the ocean to deadly relatives in the material world. He says that just as these sharks or these octopus or all these creatures or big whales, they are just going to devour you up. So similarly your family or your relatives are like these creatures, or your materialistic relatives are like these creatures in the ocean. They are actually a threat to you. They are a danger to you. They are all going to devour you one day. So after he suffers, again, you know, thirst was not quenched. He tried but thirst was not quenched. Sought out the company of other people, but again got beaten in that aspect also because they are also out there to just devour you up. So then he gets frustrated, this jiva in this bhavasagar or in this material ocean, and he wants to come out of this ocean now. So how does he come out? Someone has to help him to come out. It is said that in an ocean, if you are caught in huge currents, then you cannot swim yourself. Someone has to pick you out of that ocean. But this man, nobody is available, so he tries to search for something by which he can hold on to and swim to the shore of the ocean. But there are just particles, some particles, wooden particles or some straws or some, nowadays there could be some plastic things which ships dispose of on the ocean. So he tries to hold on to them, but they are not going to help him cross over this ocean or this bhavasagar. And then Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains that in order for this jiva to escape from this ocean, this poisonous ocean of the material world, he requires a strong boat. And this boat is the boat of devotional service. And it will come further in this Aila Gita, in the towards the last few verses when Krishna is instructing Uddhava, he says that this boat of devotional service is what is required by a jiva to come out of this bhavasagar. And the captain is a pure devotee of the Lord. So unless a pure devotee of the Lord brings the boat of devotional service to this jiva, There is no other there is no other respite for him from this ocean. There is no other way that he can escape from this ocean. So we see that pure devotees of the Lord and acharyas, our previous acharyas, they explain the sufferings of sense gratification to us, or the perilous condition of jiva in this material world who is trying to enjoy sense gratification. And they show us these horrors and the entanglements one can get into because of being attached to sense gratification through these allegories. And there is a seminar which Bhakti Vijnana Goswami had given in Radhadesh. And there he was explaining that why this jiva enters into this bhavasagar or this material ocean. So he was comparing the jivas to fireflies or glow bombs. And he was saying that we were all of us who are conditioned living entities in this material world, we were like glow bombs. We wanted to show off our little light in the spiritual world. But the spiritual world, who is there? Krishna is there. And there are two characters, or there are two things which Krishna cannot do. And this is like a negative glorification of Krishna. The first thing Krishna cannot do is explained, is that he can never reject a person who has taken shelter of him, or who has come to him seeking his shelter. And we have the classic example of Vibhishan from Ramayana. So when Ram was on the opposite side of the ocean with all his monkey soldiers and with Lakshman, Vibhishan, who was rejected by Ravana, and he was actually a very saintly person. So he comes to this side of the ocean and he wants to take shelter of Lord Ram. And Lord Ram has a discussion with the monkeys when they see Vibhishan approaching. And the monkeys are very dubious, they are very doubtful about Vibhishan's qualifications. Just because of his association, his brother is Ravana, none other than the great demon Ravana. So the monkeys were very doubtful about Vibhishan's character. And they tell Lord Ram that, I don't know, we don't know how this Vibhishan is, and we don't know whether he is really a good person or no. Maybe he has come to spy on us, or maybe he has come on a mission of Ravana. So the monkeys were all telling Ram like this. But then Ram says that, no, I have decided that I am going to give him shelter. And Ram further explains that he says, what to speak of Vibhishan, who has actually, you know, who is a good person, I can see he is a good person and he has come to my shelter. Even if Ravana comes tomorrow and seeks my shelter, I will forget my enmity with him and I will give him shelter. So I was listening to a lecture by Gaurang Prabhu, and he was mentioning that Krishna and Ram, like Krishna or Ram, they promise. Sometimes we see some people just joke, or sometimes people don't say it very seriously when they are praying to God. Or sometimes people are just aggrieved because of some distress in life and they say to the Lord. So he says, whether a person says jokingly, or a person says seriously, or a person says casually to me that, O Krishna, I have come to your shelter. That person may have said it casually, but I take it seriously. And I never leave that person throughout his lifetime. I never leave that person, and he is under my shelter eternally. So this is Krishna's promise. And this is one thing Krishna cannot do, that reject a person who has come to his shelter. And the second thing which Krishna cannot do is he cannot see darkness. And this is because Krishna is brilliant like thousands of suns, it is said. His bodily effulgence is so great that the entire spiritual world lights up just because of his bodily effulgence. And it is said that the sun and moon are nothing but reflected light of Krishna's bodily effulgence. So then we can imagine, like Bhakti Vijnana Goswami was explaining, that we are like fireflies and Krishna is brilliant as the sun. And in the spiritual world, we are trying to show off our little light, our dim light in the spiritual world. But it will not work there. We cannot show off our light over there, because everywhere there is brilliance, everywhere there is light, nobody can see our light. And therefore, we have to come into a dark place. You can see the light of a glow worm if it's very dark. So similarly, we have to come in a dark place to show off our dim light. And that is why we came into this dark material world. Krishna sent us here so that we can all show off our dim light. And also in the spiritual world, Krishna is so effulgent that we couldn't show off our light over there. And in the Krishna book, there is the pastime of gopis complaining to Mother Yashoda. They used to tell Mother Yashoda that your Krishna is stealing butter. And Yashoda had told them, you hide your pots in a dark place. And they said, like you said, we are hiding our pots in dark places. But you put so many ornaments on Krishna that the effulgence of his ornaments light up the place. And then he steals the butter easily. He can see where the pots have been kept. So then Yashoda says, okay, shall I remove the ornaments of Krishna so that he doesn't steal your butter? And then they say, but the gopis say, no, but his body only gives out this bluish effulgence. And even if there are no ornaments on him, still he will light up the place and he will be able to steal butter. So Krishna's effulgence is like that, and we glowworms had to come down to the dark material world to show off our effulgence. And it is said that even if all the glowworms in the world get together and they show off their lights all together, they cannot match the brilliance of the sun. And this allegory is compared to all of us jivas. As much as we try to lord over the material nature, as much as we try our creative abilities, our enjoying propensities, as much as we try, we are not going to be able to match with Krishna's lording or Krishna's proprietorship or Krishna's creative ability. So the Upanishads explain that when such a jiva comes into the material world, the first desire which develops in this jiva is the attraction to the opposite sex, the attraction to associate with the opposite sex. And this is what we are seeing in King Pururava's condition also, how attracted he was. As soon as he saw the beautiful form of Urvashi, he was so attracted to her and he wanted to have sexual union with her and he wanted to enjoy with her. And this has happened because every jiva gets that. It is explained in the Shastras. Every jiva gets this. As soon as he comes down like a glowworm to show off his light in the material world, the first desire that develops is the attraction to the opposite sex. And it is explained that this develops in the jiva's heart because he is feeling incompleteness in the material world. In the spiritual world, the jiva was complete. He was completely satisfied because he was in the association of Lord Shri Krishna. But in the material world, because there is no association of Krishna, the jiva feels very incomplete. And that is why he seeks out the association of the opposite sex. And This is like a perverted reflection of the purified desire of the spiritual world, and that becomes the goal of his life, to enjoy with the opposite sex. So Srila Prabhupada once asked his disciples when they were having a morning walk once again, and he asked that, why do you have sex desire? And the devotees were all wondering. They were a bit taken aback that Srila Prabhupada is asking such a direct question. So they were wondering what answer to give to Prabhupada. Why do we have sex desire? And there was silence for some time because they were a bit perplexed what to answer Srila Prabhupada. And that too, when Prabhupada asks you, he asks you in such a cutting way that you can't beat around and give some answer which will suit. So, no, Prabhupada explains that he said that you have sex desire because you want to enjoy sex. That is what Prabhupada explains. And the devotees realize that yes, it is true that we want to enjoy sex, and that is why that desire is there in our heart. So as soon as we give up the sex desire, then this problem will not be there in the material world, this attraction to the opposite sex. So Prabhupada made it very simple that it is in our heart or it is in our hands to give up this sex desire, and no, we will be totally free from it. So it's our determination and our endeavor which Prabhupada was talking about. So we see that similarly King Pururava also, he had so much sex desire in his heart, and that was the only reason why he wanted to associate with Urvasi, just to enjoy her beautiful body. And Prabhupada says that once you give it up, no longer that attraction will be there. And we see here King Pururava will sing this Aila Gita, like this verses of sort of renunciation or detesting sense gratification, and slowly he will give it up and then he will just leave and he will become a very good devotee of the Lord. So Srila Prabhupada's instructions about sex desire and sense gratification are very strong in this material world, and he says that even among devotees, when they get married, there should be no desire for sex, or there should be no sense gratification. The union should be there only for producing Krishna conscious children. Otherwise devotees should not have this intimate relationship or sexual union all the time. And once Chandrasekhar Prabhu, who is the ISKCON minister, who is the ISKCON prison minister, he had just got married at that time, and he asked Srila Prabhupada. He said that, Prabhupada, what is this intimate relationship between a husband and a wife? And Prabhupada answered him that when the wife finishes cooking and she has offered the bhoga to the Lord, the husband should go out on the street and three times he should call out, if anyone is hungry, please come and take prasad. If anyone is hungry, please come and take prasad. If anyone is hungry, please come and take prasad. So Chandrasekhar Prabhu was a bit bewildered. He said, I asked Prabhupada, what is the intimate relationship between a husband and wife? And Prabhupada is answering like that. Maybe Prabhupada didn't hear properly. So he again goes to Prabhupada and he asks, Prabhupada, what is this intimate relationship between husband and wife? And Srila Prabhupada again says, when your wife cooks bhoga and she offers it to the Lord, you go out in the street and you say three times, if anyone is hungry, please come and take prasad. So again Chandrasekhar Prabhu was, after some time, they walked around for some time and he was mulling over Prabhupada's answer. And he decided that no, Prabhupada has not understood my question. So he again goes and asks Prabhupada, that Prabhupada, I was actually wanting to ask you, what is this intimate relationship? What should it be? How should an intimate relationship be? He further clarified his question to Prabhupada, between a husband and wife. And Prabhupada said, when your wife cooks bhoga and she offers it to the Lord, you go out on the street and you three times call out, if anyone is hungry, please come and take prasad. If anyone is hungry, please come and take prasad. So Srila Prabhupada was very clear. He had understood the question in the first instance itself. But what he was trying to drive home was that intimate relationship, this marriage, even in Krishna consciousness, is just to help each other advance and is to serve other devotees and call other devotees to your house and serve them prasad and serve Lord Krishna. It is not meant for you and your wife to enjoy an intimate relationship. That is the message Prabhupada was trying to give. So we are talking so much about sense gratification, and Jadabharat, when he gives this allegory about the merchant to King Rahuguna, he also explains in those instructions, there are chapters, various chapters in the fifth canto, full of instructions of Jadabharat to Rahuguna. And in one of the verses, he explains to Rahuguna that there are three phases of sense gratification, or when a jiva who is like a globum and who comes down to this material world and who wants to enjoy or associate with the opposite sex. So there are three phases of sense gratification, Jadabharat explains. The first phase is called Kama Madhulavan. Kama Madhulavan means that sense gratification is there, but it is very, very insignificant in this material world. Like Kama Madhulavan. Madhu means honey. So it's like just drops of honey. So much you are trying, you have come in this material world to enjoy sense gratification, he says. So you will get some sense gratification, you will experience some pleasure, but it will be so insignificant, like a small drop of honey. So in the small drop of honey when you taste, yes, there is some sweetness in the small drop of honey, but can that sweetness satisfy us? No, maybe it may just keep us yearning for more once we have tasted a small drop. So he explains that this whole material world is like that, and the sense gratification is also like that. It will give you little bit pleasure, but it aggravates it more and more. Like we saw that in Bhaktivinoda Thakur's allegory, how that person drinks salty water and then his thirst is just aggravated. So same thing Jadabharat also explains, that sense gratification is so insignificant, plus after you experience that little bit drop, you get so much more desire to have it more and more, and it is just like putting fuel on the fire, he explains. And Srila Prabhupada says that this is the difference between Maya and Krishna. Somebody asked Prabhupada that, what is the difference, Prabhupada, between Maya and Krishna? So he says that Maya also attracts and Krishna also attracts. Both have this attracting characteristic. But Maya will attract you, but Maya will not be able to satisfy you. Whereas Krishna will attract you and Krishna will also satisfy you completely. That is the difference between Maya and Krishna. So this is the first aspect of sense gratification, and Prabhupada explained further that Maya is very clever. She will give you small amounts of sense gratification, but after that you will get this horrors, or like the person faced when he had entered the ocean, you will face the horrors of enjoying that little bit amount of sense gratification. And in this connection there is a very interesting story of a Zen teacher. Now Zens are these Buddhist monks. So he wanted Zen, even the Buddhist their philosophy is also how to be detached from your sense gratification and how not to enjoy or plunder your senses so much. So he wanted to explain this concept to his disciples. So he told his disciples that today we are going to fast and we are going to observe a full fast today. And the disciples did that because their teacher was telling. And then next day in the morning when there was time to break their fast, that Zen teacher brought basketfuls of succulent green grapes and very sweet looking fresh grapes in front of these disciples. And he kept one basket in front of each disciple. And the disciples started contemplating, wow, these grapes are looking so tempting, they are so succulent. Not only our thirst will be quenched because they had done a total fast, but our hunger will also be satisfied when we eat these grapes. And they were totally involved in their mind, it was totally going on how we are going to enjoy these grapes. And as soon as they were about to take grapes, and you know, we have this experience, when we want to eat grapes, we just don't eat one, especially if they are those raisin, small raisin grapes which we get in market. We want to eat handfuls of them, and if they are sweet and nice. So the disciples are about to take a handful of grapes, and then this Zen teacher says that no, you can, these grapes are meant for you, but you can have only one. And that is how you will break your fast. And then he explains to them that I was trying to drive home this point to you, that sense gratification is like that. You may want to enjoy it, but you will just get insignificant pleasure, like actually tasting a small piece of grape. And you will be more miserable later on, after tasting this small piece of grape, than you were before. So it is better not to have indulge into sense gratification, have a little bit and then become so frustrated and your desire has become aggravated that you have become totally miserable after enjoying that sense gratification. So that was the first phase of realization which Jadbharat tells to Rahuguna. The second phase, he says, of sense gratification is that the pleasure is definitely insignificant, like little drops of honey, but the arrangements to get this insignificant pleasure are very, very significant. You have to do, they are very cumbersome. You have to put in a lot of effort and lot of endeavor to get a little bit of sense gratification. And he explains, he says, Pumsa Sriya Maithuni Bhavam Esam Tayor Mito Ridaya Granthiyahu Asa Griha Kshetra Sukapta Vitaya Janasya Moha Yam Aham Mameti. That is what he explains. So he says that, like we see in King Pururava's pastime, that there is attraction between man and woman. And what happens? This attraction further develops and it creates more and more entanglement. It creates family, it creates house. Like as soon as you have attraction to the opposite sex, you need a house, then you get a family, then you need wealth, and then you enter the society, then you have a country. So like this, it keeps multiplying, this sense gratification. So it says, Atha Griha Suta. Griha means house, Suta means son, Apta means relatives, and Vittaya means wealth. So as soon as Maithuni Bhav, or attraction to the opposite sex is there, further things follow. They all come as a package, if you have this Maithuni Bhav inside you. And against that, we have Atha Shri Krishna Namadi, in the nectar of devotion. So what does that mean? That means that when we are attached to chanting the holy names of Krishna, Naam Adi, the other things come as a package. But what are these other things? They are not Graha, Suta, Apta or Vitaya. They are Krishna's form, Krishna's pastimes, Krishna's flute. All these things get manifested along with Krishna's names. So spiritual life is so fulfilling, and Krishna's getting attracted to Krishna or his holy names is so fulfilling. It gives you complete satisfaction because it brings all these things along with it as a package. Whereas Maithuni Bhav, or attraction to the opposite sex, brings all the other things. And then you have to take so much of effort to maintain this Graha, Suta, Apta and Vitaya. So much of effort is required. Srila Prabhupada used to say that there are so many elaborate arrangements we see being done in this material world. This is nothing but to maintain that Maithuni Bhav, to maintain that sense gratification, or to maintain that attraction between the opposite sex. That all these elaborate arrangements are there in the material world. In fact, Srila Prabhupada went to the extent of saying that so much, you know, people keep talking in Kali Yuga, especially about economic development. But he said that economic development is nothing but satisfaction of lust on an organized scale. This is what Srila Prabhupada said. So in Kali Yuga especially, in the material world, lots of arrangements are being done in the name of economic development. To eat better, to sleep better, to mate better and to defend better. These are the only four things which are being addressed by this economic development. And in terms of sleeping, in terms of eating, we see like how sense gratification is insignificant, but the efforts you have to take are so significant. So there is an example of a very big businessman, a millionaire from New York. Now he was so attached to a chicken delicacy. And where was this? He was so attached to this chicken delicacy, but not from New York, from Paris. So every day, because he was a millionaire, every day he had a whole crew and a whole setup. Every day there was a special aircraft and a special pilot which used to fly to Paris because he wanted to have it fresh. Not like we have these frozen meals nowadays which are imported from Paris. So he wanted to have it fresh. So every day there was an aircraft which used to fly to Paris and get this chicken delicacy for this millionaire. So it was written that just to satisfy that small tongue, he went to such a great extent. He had a big crew, big aircraft, big pilot. Then there must have been a big finance department to finance all these things. So much extent he went to just to satisfy his tongue. So this is eating. In terms of eating, what elaborate arrangements people make to satisfy. Now in terms of sleeping, there is an example that there in Germany, like German peoples are very good inventors or technologists. So they invented a bed, and it was said that this bed, to just, you know, have better sleep, this bed was as big like an airfield. It was like a helipad, and actually a small aeroplane could land on this bed. And it came with various gadgets and various panels. So on the panels there were various buttons. Now when you are sleeping, and if you like your mother's lullaby, you are used to that. So you press a panel and your mother's lullaby will come, and you can sleep nicely when the lullaby is going on. Or if someone is in the mode of ignorance and he likes the sound of crickets and owls, so you press another button and the sound of crickets and owls will come when you are lying down. So this bed had all these arrangements. And in the morning when you want to wake up, now obviously this bed is meant for people who must not be getting up early in the morning. So when you wake up and the sun has already risen, but you want to have that experience that the sun is rising in front of your eyes, so there is another button you press, and you will see some lights in that room. Some lights will come out from the bed which will show you as if the sun is rising. And when you want to wake up, there is a sweet song you can play. There is another button you can press and a very sweet song will play. So if you are a light sleeper, you will get up with that sweet song. But if you are a little bit deep sleeper, then that sweet song will turn into a shrill. It will start screaming and yelling out so that you get out of bed. And the third stage is also there for people who don't get up even after hearing this shrill. That is, it will eject you. There is an ejection system. So there is an ejection system, and it will eject you and push you out of bed. So much of arrangements just to have or to address this basic need of sleeping. Then comes mating. Now in Italy there was a couple who were so bored of life and who wanted to do something different when they wanted to get married. So they thought, no, we will not get married in the conventional way. Like people either go to the registrar and register their marriage, or some pious people go to church and get married in front of the Lord. So they wanted to do something different. And both of them were avid swimmers and very attached to the ocean. So they thought, okay, we will get married among sharks. So a whole arrangement is made for their marriage, for them to get married among sharks. So their marriage hall is actually a tank, huge tank, which is full of sharks. And obviously if they enter just like that, they will become the wedding feast for the sharks. So they are actually taken down in a cage. And usually on wedding days, people wear, like the bride especially, wear such beautiful gown, bridal gown it is called. But in this case, because they wanted to get married underwater, they both were in swimsuits. And this is how they exchange rings, among sharks encircling their cage and inside the water wearing swimsuits. So this is the arrangements people make just for having a different experience in terms of mating. And defending, the fourth principle is defending. Now we see defense, we see there are so many wars, especially when, you know, the Afghanistan war, and there's so much coming in the news about how to withdraw soldiers from there and all that. So there are huge armies and navies and so many aircrafts and all these things being created just for having good defense force in a country. And defending against whom? Defending against our own species. It is said in the scriptures that human being is the only species which is systematically destroying its own species. In the animal kingdom, there is no threat to animals from each other, unless and until they are trying for some territory or for the same she animal or something, then there can be fight sometime. But human being is the only species, because of envy and enmity, which is trying to totally wipe out its fellow human beings. So this is the arrangement which is made for defending. And then the third phase of sense gratification, which Jada Bharat talks about to Maharaj Rahu Guna. He says that the pleasure is definitely insignificant, which you get in this material world. It is like little drops of honey or that tiny piece of grape which the Zen teacher was talking to his disciples about. And the efforts are definitely significant or too cumbersome. So much endeavor. We saw in eating, sleeping, mating, defending, people make so much endeavor to have a different experience and to get little bit of pleasure. But the reactions to this little sense gratification are very, very significant. So Jadabharat says, Nihata patati apara niraye. Nihata. Nihata means beaten. A conditioned living entity who is trying to enjoy this sense gratification is continuously beaten and thrown. Patati apara niraye means he is thrown into the hellish conditions of life for having enjoyed sense gratification. So as it is said, in the material world there are no free lunches. There is a famous English proverb. There is a price tag attached to everything. So similarly, Maya also does not give even that little bit of sense of gratification free of cost. As soon as you have enjoyed, or as soon as you entered, she enticed you first, she attracted you, and then as soon as you entered into its realm and you got that tiny bit of sense gratification, the bill will come from Maya. And you will get the horrors, or you will face the consequences of having enjoyed this sense gratification. So Prabhupada was once on a morning walk with his disciples, and there was a man who was fishing, and he had just caught a big fish, and he saw Prabhupada walking in a saffron dress, so he thought it's a monk coming, okay, he had a little bit of respect for the monk. So he offered that fish to Prabhupada, and he said, here, you can have it, he said to Prabhupada. So Prabhupada looked at the fish and the man, and he said, no, you enjoy it. And he kept walking. And the disciples who were walking with Prabhupada, because Prabhupada's every morning walk used to be like an instruction for his disciples. So much the disciples used to learn from Prabhupada's morning walks and each and every talk or conversation of Prabhupada. So the disciples were a bit taken aback that how Prabhupada is telling fish is not supposed to be eaten by devotees or even by human beings. Then why is Prabhupada telling him you enjoy it? But as soon as Prabhupada was out of earshot of that man, he said, and then you suffer in hell. So Srila Prabhupada knew that if you enjoy little bit of sense, that fish may give little bit of sense gratification to the tongue of that man. But later on he has to suffer in hell for having killed another species. So in the ninth canto, there is a nice pastime of Ajamil and also of Shaubari Muni. That how they tried to enjoy sense gratification, and for that little bit of sense gratification, they had to make such elaborate arrangements. And after making those elaborate arrangements, both of them had to suffer. Or they had to face the reactions of those elaborate arrangements or of that sense gratification which they tried to enjoy. So in the case of Ajamil, we know the pastime that how he married a prostitute. He was so attracted to the prostitute that he actually went out and married her. Now this marrying a prostitute is unheard of even in Kali Yuga, what to speak of in Ajamil's time. In Kali Yuga also we don't see people marrying prostitutes. People may go and enjoy with prostitutes, and prostitution definitely is on a much larger scale than it was during Ajamil's time. But people just go and enjoy and pay money to the prostitute. People don't marry the prostitute and bring her home. But Ajamil was so infatuated with this prostitute that he actually went and married her. And then he brought her home. And not only he brought her home, he had to maintain all the sons and daughters of that prostitute which she had from her previous associations with other men. So it is mentioned over there that nyayato anyayato dhanam babharasya kutum vinya. So nyayato and anyayato, that legally and illegally, Ajamil had to do so much endeavor to maintain, by legal and illegal means, to maintain this big family which the prostitute brought along, and also the numerous sons and daughters which he himself got from this prostitute. So he had to suffer so much consequences of maintaining this just for that little bit of sense gratification with that prostitute. And the second very profound example is of Shaubari Muni. And this is again in the ninth canto where King Pururava's pastime is also mentioned. Now Shaubari Muni, he marries 50 daughters of King Mandata. And this Shaubari Muni, if any of you know the pastime, is the same Muni whom we hear about so many times. He was actually meditating underwater and he saw two fish copulating or two fish having sexual intercourse, and he falls down from his brahminical position. And then he gets this desire that he also wants to associate with the opposite sex, he also wants to get married. So he goes to King Mandata, and Shaubari Muni, because he had done tapasya for many, many years, he had become very old and there were all wrinkles on his skin and his hair had become grey and white. So King Mandata actually is not very eager to give his daughters to him in marriage. And he says that when Shaubari Muni asks for his daughters, that I would like to marry your daughter. He says that my daughters will marry whomever they please. And Shaubari Muni knew that his daughters will not select him if he goes in front of them like this. So Shaubari Muni, because of his tapasya, he was a great mystic. So he goes and then he transforms himself into a very handsome youth. And then he comes in front of the daughters and then he tells them that I would like to marry you all. I am Shaubari Muni and I would like to marry you all. And he marries all the 50 daughters. But after he has married, they also get attracted to him because he was also so handsome and he had come in front of them like a youth. So they also get attracted to him and they all marry him. But after they are all married, they all start fighting amongst each other, it is mentioned. They forget their sisterly relationship that goes out of the window when, you know, attraction to the opposite sex comes in the heart. So they all start fighting with each other. Who will get claim over Shaubari Muni and who will get his attention? Who will get his time? They kept fighting amongst each other. And then Shaubari Muni was so fed up. So what he did again with his mystic power, he expanded and he created so many palaces for all these 50 daughters of King Mandata. And he created so many ornaments for them, so many parks, so many reservoirs. He had to do so much to satisfy these 50 princesses. And it is mentioned he brought sandalwood creams for them. So all these things he had to do just to satisfy these 50 princesses. And then after he has enjoyed years and years of sexual union with them and married life with them, one day he is sitting alone and he is contemplating. Like we see King Pururava over here. King Pururava has gone in a contemplative mood now, or in like a self-realization mood, because Urvashi has gone away. So same way, Shaubari Muni is contemplating in a secluded place. And he is thinking, he is saying, what has become of me? He says that I married these 50 daughters of King Mandata and I expanded myself to satisfy them. But look at me. He says that I have totally fallen down from my brahminical position. What was I doing and where have I come? And there is a very nice verse which he says in the 9th canto. He says, Aho imam pashyatame vinasham tapasvina sat charita vritasya antar jale vari charat prasangat prachyavitam brahma iham vritam yat. So he says that look at my pitiable and miserable condition. Aho mimam pashyate vinasham. He says, look at my pitiable condition. Totally I have brought vinash on myself. And he says, anta jale vari charit prasangat. I was inside the water. And you know which waters he was in? He was in the waters of the Yamuna. That too in Vrindavan. So he was meditating in Vrindavan, in the waters of the Yamuna. But just because he saw two fish copulating, he fell down from his brahminical position. So he says that just because I saw them, I also got that desire in my heart of sense gratification, of maithuni bhav, and I wanted to enjoy with the opposite sex. And I have totally lost all my tejas, all my powers as a Brahmin. Look at me, what a miserable situation I am in, he says. And Srila Prabhupada says a very important point in the translation to this verse. Srila Prabhupada says that Shaubari Muni is saying this verse, and he says that everyone look at me, and everyone should learn from me. What happens when a person gets entangled too much into sense gratification? You all will understand that because of this maithuni bhav, that graha, suta, apta, vittaye, he had to have so many houses to maintain those 50 princesses, so many children, so much wealth, and total entanglement. And he says, I just fell down. I was nicely doing tapasya. I had taken so many vows. I was doing austerities in the holy waters of Yamuna. But O people, he is talking to the conditioned jivas like us who have the desire for sense gratification. He says, learn from my example. Look at my pitiable condition and learn for all times to come that how sense gratification only brings about vinasham, or it only brings about frustration and misery in life. So this is, he is openly revealing his condition in the pages of Srimad Bhagavatam. So we see throughout the Bhagavatam, so many personalities, and these are all elevated personalities. Even King Pururava, he was not an ordinary person. He was a very, very qualified king. So we see all of them revealing the perils of sense gratification, how they all got entrapped into sense gratification and how they all suffered after that. King Pururava is right now suffering separation from Urvashi, and that has made him go into a contemplative mood. And this Aila Gita is coming out. And how sense gratification brings nothing but perils and nothing but horrors and nothing but misery in this material world. So we will have little bit of sense gratification, like Jadabharat says in the first phase, but we will have to make so many arrangements to satisfy this sense gratification, and in the end we will have to face the reactions of enjoying this sense gratification. So it's time up now. We'll end our class here. Thank you very much. Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam ki. Srila Prabhupada ki. Yes.